Hello, listeners. Welcome to the latest episode of Private Equity Talks. I'm Julio Ismailai, reporter at Real Deals. And in this episode, we'll be discussing ESG reporting requirements, looking at how much transparency mid-market GPs are able to live with, and even questioning whether it might all be in vain. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Richard Burratt, Chief Sustainability Officer at Earth Capital, which is a UK-based early-stage clean tech investor. Hi, Richard. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you. I'm looking forward to discussing this topic.
Good. I'm glad you're doing well and here with me today. Before we begin, can I just get a brief introduction from you in relation to your current role and the perspective you're bringing in relation to ESG reporting requirements?
Yeah, so as you said, I'm a director and chief sustainability officer at Earth Capital. I've been involved for almost two sort of decades now in the sustainable finance space. So I've seen the whole sector develop from the sort of first forays into disclosure around environmental, social, governance factors through to, you know, the sort of rather complicated and complex scene we have now around ESG reporting. In my role at Earth Capital, I mean, quite clearly, we're engaged in this topic. We have our own bespoke approach to ESG assessment and disclosure, but you can't get away from what's happening in the market. And I also sit on the board of Triodos Bank in the UK as a non-exec director, and that sector too is faced with some real challenges that are being posed in the market.
Got it. Thank you. And those market challenges, I'm sure we'll get into. Now, of course, I'm sure most of us, most of our listeners will know to a good degree about ESG reporting and the requirements. There are a whole host of competing reporting requirements, some mandatory, some voluntary, etc. But others may not be as familiar with the landscape. So I sort of wanted to kick things off by asking you, Richard, if you could just give us the sort of the lay of the land in terms of reporting requirements and what we might be looking at here.
Yeah, so to be honest, it's a bit of an alphabet soup of reporting requirements. You know, we've seen TCFD, the Task Force for Climate Financial Disclosure, looking at the issue of climate change. That's now morphed into something else, having gained a certain level of maturity. We have TNFD, looking at nature financial disclosure. There are the beginnings now of approaches to look at inequality financial disclosure through TIFD. So you've got those sort of initially voluntary initiatives, which some of which TCFD are now being made mandatory in certain jurisdictions. You've then got a whole host of there's some EU initiatives around the sustainable finance agenda. I guess the EU taxonomy, which is better known perhaps these days as SFDR, is a sort of principal reporting requirement for the investment management industry. Post-Brexit, the UK has got its own SDR, which is similar, but different, of course. And then, you know, if you go over to the sort of North America, I mean, SASB is one of the dominant reporting approaches there, even though it is used more broadly, and that's a sort of sustainability accounting board approach. There are a whole host of different reporting requirements around the world, and depending on where your fund is and you know who it's engaging with as investors, you'll be caught by different requirements. You've then got requirements that are finally beginning to bite on the real economy, like CSRD, the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive within the EU. So all in all, a lot of activity. I saw And this is probably a couple of years ago, a report by EY who suggested that there were 600 different reporting requirements around ESG globally. So I know there's a lot of pressure to standardize those, and perhaps we'll come on to that in a moment, but it really is a very complex complex background.
Definitely, definitely. And yeah, as you say, this clearly creates huge volume of activity for GPs. GPs are required to provide high volume of data in many different formats. So I suppose the question really is how feasible is it for portfolio companies to bring this data to GPs and on the flip side for GPs to collect this data? Because my understanding is that private equity firms, when they can't, they have to make estimations or only partially cover their portfolio. How feasible is this really?
So I guess the answer is it depends. I mean, it depends on the sort of size of companies you're dealing with. You know, if you're dealing with larger, more sophisticated, more mature companies that have relatively robust financial reporting activities within them, then it will be easier to do it. I mean, you know, if I look at our example at Earth Capital. I mean, we're dealing with initially businesses that may only have a million or two in turnover. So the likelihood that they're going to have a financial reporting team available to do this is minimal. So actually think it is really challenging. I think another problem is if you look at some of the reporting requirements, they're actually really demanding in terms of the scope and comprehensive nature of the data points that they're asking companies to report on. So it's highly unlikely that the portfolio companies we invest in will have already captured that data. So this will be something else that we will have to impose on them. And I guess my concern is, you know, in the early growth phase, they're using all of their operational bandwidth to actually survive and try to thrive and grow. Is this a distraction? Notwithstanding the good intent that lies behind this, these reporting directives.
Got it, right. And of course you earlier mentioned then the importance of standardization here, right? So the sheer amount of these reporting frameworks has obviously made it more difficult to compare and contrast companies. Where are we at with standardization right now? Because when we talk about reporting frameworks, there are a plethora of them. There are many people involved, which has created a noisy environment. But there's similarly a noisy environment when it comes to people trying to solve the issue of that large reporting burden. So, where would you say we're at with this currently?
Look, I think standardization is a sort of logical, intuitive thing to want. I mean, it's great if we could compare and contrast different companies, but I think it's actually really challenging in the context of ESG. Now, why do I say that? If you look at an issue like climate change, and measuring the carbon footprint of a business, I mean, there I think we've already started to develop a relatively standardized set of methodologies around scope 1, 2, 3 emissions, etc. And there is a convergence, a standardization of approaches. If you then look at an issue like water, you know, you could measure water save quite easily, or water used by the liter, by the gallon, whatever, you know, quantity you wanted to use. But how meaningful is that? I mean, water, from my perspective, is very context specific. You know, a liter of water in the northwest of England is actually different from a liter of water in the east of England, which is much drier as an area. And then you go, you know, if you go to Saudi Arabia, a liter of water should have a different value there. So water is very context specific. Biodiversity, very context specific. How can you compare and contrast? easily that sort of data. So, some things are easier to objectively measure than others. Some things are easier to quantify. Other things are far more challenging. When you get into social issues and social factors, there I think you get a sort of value or values overlay. People see things differently. A lot of the things that we look at in the S of ESG are quite subjective, and also to some degree in the governance area as well. So when you look at companies, there's an element of value judgment that's built into your assessment of the data points you're looking at, which is why I wonder how easy it is to standardize that, because we don't necessarily agree on those points. We know ESG is a very contested topic around the world. Some people see it as being an approach to actually institutionalize within the existing sort of capitalist world to actually allow companies to make better decisions about issues that are material to them that perhaps they would not have traditionally considered. I mean, there's no doubt that an issue like climate change or biodiversity loss is increasingly being seen as financially material. So you'd want to consider it. Yet you've got other people who see that as a somewhat, woke, left-leaning agenda. And then you've got people on the other side who see some of this as sort of greenwashing speak. So this is a very contested area, and I wonder how easy it is to genuinely standardize all of these metrics, particularly as, there is often a subjective values-based assessment needed in the evaluation of a company that you're investing in.
Got it, got it. And those are already some of the difficulties with this. There might be more that we'll touch on later.
I'm sure there are more, yeah.
I did want to say though, is could one way of reducing the complexity at least be reducing the data points, right? So we know that more data points don't always equal better information. It doesn't always mean that that information is more useful. People speak about how year on year things are being added to questionnaires and removed from questionnaires, and therefore it's also difficult to track. How do we get investors to align around the most important and relevant data points then, while also providing the minimum metrics necessary to compare portfolio companies?
Look, I would agree with your sort of suggestion that more might be less in terms of reporting data points. I think what do investors really want? They really want to know that the management of the portfolio companies that they are investing in understand what the material sort of ESG risks are that could impact their business, and that they are managing them appropriately and effectively. I mean, that's really what investors want to know. And there are sort of, if you look at the literature that's out there, there are a couple of schools of thought. One is, yes, we should try and standardize this, because if we do standardize it, it will have all the benefits we've hinted at before in terms of comparability, etc. Also from year to year. I mean, we don't really want to keep sort of, if we keep changing the goalposts, then it makes it difficult to look at how a business has performed over time. There's another school of thought which says that you really just need to focus in on the issues that are genuinely material for a particular business. Now, SASB sort of takes that approach. GRI takes that approach. What are the material issues for a company in a particular sector that are perhaps different from companies in other sectors? And I actually think the materiality argument is very strong and compelling. I think that's where our focus should be. We should be trying to identify the sustainability factors for a particular company that are more material, and we should be looking at how the company is managing those over time. Now, I mean, I mentioned before, we have our own proprietary tool called the Earth Dividend. We only look at 30 indicators in the Earth Dividend over five sort of dimensions of ESG. We look at six indicators within natural resources, six in pollution, six in ecosystem services, six in socioeconomic factors, and six in societal and governance factors. Is that the right number? It works for us, but we're dealing with smaller companies. We try and keep the tests consistent from year to year, but you have to acknowledge that what people value changes over time. So you do have to tweak your assessments from time to time to actually more accurately reflect what is valued externally in businesses. And I think, having that sort of year-on-year assessment of how a company is doing, we think is critical. And we see it less about reporting as being the value add. It's more about how you engage with the output from that report and say, well, look, what are the two or three key areas that we should focus on with this company and get them to improve from a commercial performance perspective? Which ones would perhaps manage their risk profile better in certain areas? Which ones might cause them to, innovate in their supply chain or change things in their operations? So we see ESG analysis as being a sort of decision useful process that helps us engage with companies and try to improve their performance. Reporting is nice, but if you don't actually do anything with the reporting, that worries me. I mean, it really worries me that we're spending so much time on reporting now as an industry that in 5 years' time, we may have improved the quality of our reporting significantly, but will we have really moved the dial on some of these key performance issues like climate change, biodiversity loss, etc.?
Absolutely, and this is something that has been mentioned before, which is if you look at a profit and loss report, for instance, you'll compare your current performance against how you performed last year, and you'll also consider what you will do the following year. You'll make budgets, etc. Is this something that ESG reports then need to sort of lean into a bit more? That's more to become more forward-looking, and as you say, to really consider materiality a lot more.
Yeah, look, I mean, ESG data points are traditionally quite static, current or historic data points. And as a result, I they're helpful, but I'm not sure how helpful they are. If you think about an issue like climate change, and you want to know, is your portfolio company future fit? It's good to know what its carbon footprint is. I wouldn't deny that. It's good to know scope one, two, three emissions, even scope four emissions, if the product that that company has helps other companies reduce their emissions, then you need to know what its role is in climate action. Does that static data on its carbon footprint now tell you whether it's going to thrive in 5 years' time or 10 years' time? No, it doesn't. So you do need a forward-looking approach. You need to do some form of scenario analysis and look at the different scenarios that that company might be contending with in the future and try to work out whether or not it will thrive in those potential future scenarios. And that's the challenge about this. And I think, looking forward, We've got to really ask ourselves, how will the way that we value different things change? And that's a really challenging topic. I mean, if you look at sort of sustainability funds over the last decade, they've actually performed relatively well. If you look at them over the last couple of years, post-Ukraine war, they've had a very mixed time, and some of them have underperformed because any that were not investing in the oil and gas industry or defense industries clearly have underperformed because those sectors have done really well given the external environment. Now, we have to sort of think about that in the context of what's going to happen going forward. Because what happens in the external environment will shape how we value those different data points. And it's why the forward-looking approach is so critical. Now, climate change, we've got some clear steers on that. We're seeing increasing extreme weather events. If we don't start to address climate change in a much more radical way, those extreme weather events are likely to continue to intensify. So physical risks on businesses will grow. If we do pivot and start imposing, strict controls around carbon and the use of carbon in the economy, then transition risk will rise. So there are a couple of potential scenarios there. Are we going to see marked policy action, or are we going to see people taking their foot off policy action, which appears to be the case at present from a government perspective in a host of countries? So how we think through what the next 5 or 10 years will look like will really, really determine, I think, how we assess companies. And it's not straightforward. But we do know that if we do nothing, physical risk from climate change will only increase.
Understood. And one thing that was pointed out, so you're touching on there effectively the urgency on of this. And one thing that was pointed out to me in previous conversations is that the sort of the mandate for private equity firms to refine their KPIs and procedures to fulfill these ESG reporting requirements is happening at a speed that financial reporting did not face, right? And perhaps is it just the case, if we maybe shift the perspective, you might not agree with this, but is it the case that all the things that we've been discussing so far are just part of the necessary challenges to make the transformations that we are aiming for, and we've just got to maybe just give time for ESG to mature? What's your view on that?
Oh, I think ESG needs to mature. I mean, I think the current version of ESG we have is quite a blunt tool. I mean, when rating agencies sort of try to reduce ESG to one score over a company, I start to worry about that because I think we should be looking at a host of environmental, social, and governance risks and understanding them individually and understanding which ones are material for a company. I mean, in a sense, adding them all up and then coming out with an aggregate score seems illogical to me and a bit of a nonsense and very reductionist. And I think we're partly shooting ourselves in the foot as an industry by attempting to do that. We're also seeing the difficulty of comparing those scores. If you compare a, I don't know, a Sustainalytics rating with a rating by another rating agencies, I mean the correlation is often quite low. But as I said before, because there are values-based judgments into the way that we might view the governance risks of a business over the social risks of a business over the environmental risks, I don't see how we would achieve that standardization. You talked about financial reporting. Yes, we have GAAP, but we have UK GAAP and US GAAP and Nigerian GAAP and international GAAP, and they often even report financial numbers slightly differently, depending on the conventions that are used in different countries. So even judgment comes into those, and those took decades to produce. So I think it will take a while. And it sort of shouldn't be a surprise. I mean, I was chatting to an engineer recently who said he gets really frustrated when people say, "Oh, look at the teething problems in this particular industry." And he said, "Look, you know, if you look historically at engineering," and he'd spent a lot of time looking at the history of his own domain, he said, "Look, Stephenson's rocket, you know, didn't just suddenly appear as a perfect example of a machine. I mean, there were decades of horrendous failures of other people trying to do similar things, and Stevenson himself. Same goes clearly with the aircraft industry. I mean, we've seen those wonderful black and white pictures of people trying to take to the air. I mean, it took years and years of attempt and failure before, you know, some of those technologies made that leap. Same with the automotive industry, and the sort of Model T, Ford, and the other variants around the world. So I don't think that this challenge of sustainability reporting is really any different. I think we'll go through a period of experimentation. It may well appear messy. It certainly does at present, to me at least, and to many others, I believe. And hopefully, we won't allow that to get in the way of moving capital into socially useful areas, which is, you know, what we're ultimately trying to do, I think. And this is where I do have concern about this agenda. I mean, if I look at the EU, you know, the EU has a very bold action plan with a policy objective that is really trying to leverage, you know, financial capital to support sustainable economic growth and to manage, you know, environmental, social, and governance issues. And you know, it's trying to, you know, reorientate capital flows. It's trying to mainstream sustainability into risk management, and it's trying to sort of foster transparency and long-termism. Fine, I totally support those policy objectives. I just wonder whether, you know, SFDR and some of the sort of burdensome reporting requirements, CSRD on the real economy, are actually going to do that. I think they're going to make a lot of money for consultants who are going to have to help companies do these,
And lawyers.
and lawyers, yeah. But whether they're actually going to help to reorientate capital towards economic activities that support, you know, long-term sustainable value creation, I've got a big question mark over that. You know, I really think, in some respects, you know, the policymakers should be looking at trying to reshape the real economy into what they believe it should be, and try to identify areas that have socially useful value creation, and reduce those areas through standards and regulation that don't, rather than rely on reporting to somehow change the system. And that's my biggest concern on this topic. I think reporting requirements, reporting metrics, are actually a pretty ineffective lever for changing what is a very complex system. You know, people say you can't manage what you don't measure, and I totally agree with that. But the fact you measure something doesn't mean you're going to manage it.
Got it. So a lot of question marks, as you say, but you know we've got things now, such as the ESG Data Convergence Initiative, which is a bunch of private equity stakeholders coming together to at least make reporting to LPs easier, for instance. Is that a helpful initiative?
It's helpful, yes, if you want to make reporting converge. Whether that will positively change the system and get more capital flowing into the sustainable economy, I don't know. But it will certainly improve reporting.
I mention it because I'm trying to end on a hopeful note.
Well, of course, look, it will help reporting. I mean, there's no doubt that we do need to report out on what we're doing. There's a lot of skepticism around what companies are doing. We know there have been lots of allegations of greenwashing, particularly in the real economy, but also in the investment sector as well. We know in the private equity world, there's an allegation that there's a lack of transparency about what we do. So I think any initiatives that promote more transparency and promote greater reporting of what we're doing, the better. Let's just not take our eye off the real ball, which is changing the economy.
Absolutely. Really great to have you here today, Richard, to talk about ESG reporting requirements from your perspective. For listeners, I hope this has helped you grasp the topic better. And at Real Deals, we actually covered this area in an article recently with contributions from ICG, Living Bridge, and Summa Capital, all of which bring in different perspectives across the mid-market. So please do check out the piece. It will be linked in the description to this podcast. Otherwise, thank you to all of you for tuning in, and I hope to see you soon on another episode of Private Equity Talks.